Hey there, welcome to the Flight Risk Studios podcast show. I'm your host, Robert Bruton. It is April 30th, 2024, and we are almost done and getting into my birthday month. So if you were thinking about gifts, you can find me registered at Gulfstream Aerospace. just kidding. So, wow, lots going on in the world. And so I am moving one of my books, or I actually have published some of the books that were on Kindle have actually been published. I think we've got three converted over into paperback now, which will all be on Amazon. So you are welcome to go there and I'm under Robert Bruton, B-R-U-T-O-N. And if you follow the link in my show description, you can find my author page on you can find my author page, and it should have all of my work is all listed there. So please, if you have a chance and you're interested, today we're going to be talking about one of the books in particular that actually hasn't gone up yet. It probably will be up later today or tomorrow. It does take a couple days for Amazon to approve the layout and book cover and all that kind of stuff, so it's kind of cool. Anyway, I wanted to just kind of talk about or begin the show. There's so much going on in college campuses from the West Coast to the East Coast, even in my home state of Texas, and this is going to segue into the book that I'm converting into a paperback, which is Unlocking the Power of Emotional Mastery. Because here's the skinny. I think a lot of these kids, you know, first off, most of them don't even know why the hell they're there, which is a sad state of affairs. You ask them, or, you know, that one little girl that was, I think if you've watched videos much, you can see her going, they came from New York University over to Columbia. She goes, what are we here for? Oh, yeah, we're doing something about Palestine. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're just there to be there. You're just there because you don't have to go to class, which is a sad state of affairs. If you're going to take a position in something, then take a position. And again, we've talked about, and this holds true in all aspects of your life when you're trying to better your life, is you have to understand both sides. You can take a side, but understand both sides. That way you can make, if your side is one way, then you can, and you understand both ways, then you can talk about why you disagree with their stance. But when you don't even know what their stance is, you don't have much of a leg to stand on. And that's why, sorry to say, but that's why conservative talkers tear college students apart, is because they don't come prepared. They don't understand both sides of the fence. They understand, and we all kind of tend to do that without opening up our minds to critical thinking, is we all tend to say, well, that sucks, I don't even like that. But you gotta know both sides of the story before you can really make a compelling argument. And so that, you know, and then these kids are going nuts and they're commandeering buildings now at Columbia, you know, and I'm sitting there going, what is any of that going to solve? It's going to most likely destroy your college career, because the government's never going to allow you to get away with that. You can sit there, and that where all this breaks down is these kids are trying to get amnesty for themselves. But when you push too far, and I'm not suggesting that you can't jump and scream and yell and but do it in a way that doesn't get you in trouble. You know, you're very welcome in this country to protest, but do so in a way that doesn't lose your scholarship, gets you expelled from school, it gets you a felony arrest onto your background that's going to follow you for basically the rest of your life. And and when you go in to find a job and let and, people are going to go, wow, you've got this felony conviction for assaulting police officers and all that. And do you think that the PR behind that is a company wants to take a chance on hiring you if you have some sort of felony record, felony arrest, felony conviction that has to do with you? Maybe you hit a cop. They're going to call it ugly stuff, and that's what is sad that these kids don't understand is you're going to be charged with ugly crimes. Hitting a police officer, that ain't going to go too well for you when you start getting background checks on your who you are and what your character is. Wait, you beat up a cop? No, we'll pass. Because if you get pissed with one of the coworkers, and you hurt somebody at your job, seemingly, then what's really, if because you disagree with the company and you hurt people at the job and they knew that you had this background, what kind of lawsuit is that setting up? And again, when you can articulate a story with a compelling that compels people to listen to you, you're bullshit out on the campus raising hell and destroying shit, or putting up an American or taking down American flags and flying Palestinian flags. No, that's going to follow you forever. Sorry, I had a little glitch in the matrix, but anyway, when you cross lines, that's when things, you can wave your Palestinian flag, that's fine. You have every right to. But when you take it to a level where you disgrace your country and you think that that's going to make anything change, because there's a lot of men and women out there who have lived through many wars. And a lot of veterans out there that, when you disgrace the colors, you just spat in the face of Americans who fought for the freedom for you to be able to peacefully protest. That's not peacefully protesting. That's being a horrible human being. I mean, that's just, because I support 100% your peaceful right to do it. And what sucks for me is that you see so many of these kids that don't even know why they're fucking out there. So I hope that anyone who would be listening to this podcast would avail themselves of learning both sides of an argument. And then that's why a lawyer will absolutely tear you apart, is because they do know both sides of this. They do know both sides, and they're going to use all of that, and your message will become moot because you look like an idiot. So I'm going to teach you how to not look like an idiot, hopefully. Because jumping up and down, raising hell and screaming, and I don't know how you get your head behind. There's a lot of gay people that are protesting for Palestine, and I'm sitting there, and then they're talking. And if you walk down the streets of some of these countries, that's they wouldn't be pretty. Let's just put it that way. So, that, again, that's why you learn both sides of the fence. What the wrongdoing is of all of this, and I think we can all agree on that, is genocide, war, unrest, call it a police action or whatever the hell bullshit label the government wants to put on it, it's still wrong. Absolutely. We can all agree on that. That's something that brings us all together. Absolutely brings us all together. Nobody wants that. That's not even, no decent human being, no matter where you are, prays for that. Because when it becomes one of your family members that gets hurt or killed in a situation, you know, in a conflict like that, or entire families are gone because of things like that, we can all agree that that's the, so that, that when you start identifying what's the root cause of all this shit, you know, and what would piss a country off so bad that they would resort to this level of violence. Those are the key issues that need to be addressed, and someone needs to come up, and you know, if a student wanted to really impress, you know, sit down and figure out a way for everybody to live peaceably on this earth. Is that so you know, utopian that it's just never going to exist? Is that just a thing that on this earth that we can't coexist as human beings? What the fuck is that about? At least in my mind. So the other thing that, and this gets us into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, is, you know, when you lose your shit, you know, you become, you get out there and you're protesting, and then you lose your shit, or someone's trying to debate with you and you lose your shit. Do you know why you lose your shit? It's because you don't have enough knowledge to process what's going on. You don't. I'm sorry, but you don't. You can sit there and argue that point, but when you become combative in a discourse, then that means you're out of ammo. You ain't got nothing. So that's what I'm talking about. When you learn both sides of an argument, no matter what you do in this life, let's say you've got you're a boyfriend and a girlfriend, and you're just on two sides of the fence on two separate on its, I say no, you're on two sides of the fence, okay? The fence is growing higher and higher where you can't see each other, but you're not willing to listen to the other one, to one or the other. How many good relationships have been lost because of stubbornness? Because you weren't willing to be quiet, be respectful, and listen. You don't have to agree with it, but listen. You know why? Because it's important to the person who's telling you this. You don't, again, agreement is not part of this, but listening with an open heart, listening with an open mind more so than anything, and saying, okay, well, I don't agree with your point. It sucks. I'm mad as hell, but I am going to shut up and I'm going to listen to you. And you may need to take a minute, and here's the thing about doing stuff like that. You probably need to take a minute and go breathe. Cooler heads prevail. So you may need to do a little breathing exercise. You may need to dismiss yourself from the room and sit down and relax for a minute. Chill. Because quieter minds, cooler heads will prevail. Because then you're receptive to hearing what someone has to say. You don't have to agree on every point, but if you understand where a person's coming from, you may be able to find common ground from which to say, okay, I love you, but we're going to agree to disagree. And I don't want to, for this to be, you know, if it's a deal breaker for you, then that's fine. But at least hear out in a open-minded way a counter thought, something that's counter to what you believe. What happens if you meet someone that you guys spend time together, you're joyful, it's happy, and you get a little ways down the road and you've never really talked about it, but then all of a sudden this one of you is a Jehovah's Witness, and I'm just using this as a because I want to do some far extreme thing, and one of you's atheist. Yet all this time that you spent together before you knew these two things, because you really just didn't even, the journey was so much fun and you were doing so many things, so much wonderful time was spent together. You fit like a glove. You're the missing puzzle piece to each other's life. And you find out two extreme views. One of you is a Jehovah's Witness, and one of you is a atheist. Does that preclude you from having any sort of relationship? When everything else in your entire life is perfect, you're attracted to each other. You have conversations and laugh into the night. You realize you've been talking so long that the sun's coming up and you never missed a beat. Yet months later into the relationship, all of a sudden it came up and you're from two opposite sides of a huge discussion. Atheist, you may not want to go down and get, and have some sort of, religious ceremony for your marriage. And if you're a Jehovah's Witness, for example, there may be doctrine set for you to have a specific style of wedding. There may be scriptures that you want read, or scriptures that are part of that faith, your wedding. So you're going to totally ruin. That's why I say, when you go back and if you rewind down to where you have two toddlers from completely different backgrounds, maybe even from two where their parents are absolute mortal to the death enemies. But if you put two toddlers out and threw some balls or blocks or something out there, you know what's going to happen is they're going to start playing together. You know why? Because they weren't told to hate each other. Think about that for a minute. Sometimes you have to rewind a relationship all the way back to, I wasn't told to dislike you. I wasn't told to hate you. I wasn't told that you were the devil incarnate. I wasn't told that, that we were at war for centuries. And you build from that point. If you take out all the reasons why you hate each other, and you plug in the reasons of conversation that you don't, it's like having a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. You put your best foot forward. You learn about each other. You fall in love from that perspective. Because how do you fall in love? Well, you learn everything there is to know about a person. And perhaps there was, the religion thing never became anything because you were too busy with other things that seemed at the moment to be more, that seemed to be more in the moment, because you guys were in the moment, and that just, it just never, for whatever reason, just never came up. So those are things to ponder. And it kind of got a little off topic there, but I think those are important things. And like I said, the show's always unscripted in a sense. And so sometimes when I feel like something's important to understand and put into the context of the show, then there we have it. All right. So understanding emotional regulation. You know, there's the science of emotion, the importance of emotional regulation, identifying emotional triggers. And I hate that word triggers, because in all my life, I never heard until just the last few years the word trigger. I'm triggered. Okay, well, here's what the part of that I think, if you have things, you know, if there are words and things that emotionally trigger you, then, and that's fine, but how do we work through that? How do we not live in the fear of being triggered for whatever reason? It may be an emotional reason that really kind of sort of was just put on you, but it could be a very good reason. I mean, you know, look at people who suffer from PTSD, for God's sake, and how a July 4th fireworks display may have a horrible effect on our military friends and family, because it triggers that, you know, the bangs and things are hard for them to emotionally deal with. Very understandable. Very understandable. But what are emotional triggers, and why, you know, and why do they affect your life so? And if it's not that big of a deal like it would be with PTSD, you know, if it's just something, then delve into why. You know, if the figure of a man triggers you as a woman, is it because of some traumatic experience, or is it just because that's what your friends are doing, what your peer group is doing? They're bashing guys that, you know, that, because not all men are evil, and not all women are evil. Some women are evil and some men are evil. Having the power of self-awareness. And I love this, because I think that as I've learned to meditate, and I've learned to breathe, and I've learned to accept life as it is, you know, you play the cards that you're dealt, because what other choice do you have? There's a lot of things going on in the government today that I just have to, and we all have to, guess what? Play the cards that are dealt us, because how am I going to change it? All I can do is go down and vote, and I'll be damned if that, and honestly, is it really going to help? Because you don't know. If you think about, you don't know where there may be, just call it what it is, cheating. Because some people are, you know, and here's what you have to ask yourself in a situation. If you have to cheat to win, is that a win at all? Anybody can fucking cheat. And when you sell yourself out like that, what are you going to do to people around you? I don't know. That could be a whole other podcast. So understanding that an emotional response is just that, it's an emotional response. You know, when you're able to, and we've talked about this, when you're able to sit and listen to things that you may find insulting, you may find profane, you may find inexcusable, you may find that it reeks of stench to the core of your body. Or you may feel disrespected down to, again, the core of your body. But we all, but you have to remember their words. And if you let them cut you, they will. If you don't allow them to cut you, they won't. Someone tells you, you know, and I tend towards the gut, so I can't, you know, but if someone sits there and goes, you know, ew, I wouldn't date a fat ass. That hurts pretty bad if you allow it to cut. But if you view it as, you know, that really that's all you got is that I'm overweight, okay. And you don't, you just say, you know what, I'm okay with me. If this person's not, then that's on them. Emotions are a fundamental aspect of the human experience, coloring our perceptions, guiding our decisions, and shaping our interactions with the world around us. The nature of emotions at their core, emotions are multifaceted phenomena that involve a complex interplay of psychological, cognitive, and behavioral components. External stimuli and other internal thoughts often trigger them, and they can be experienced as subjective feelings, such as happiness, sadness, anger, or fear. Emotions serve a crucial evolutionary purpose. They help us navigate our environment and respond to challenges and opportunities. They act as rapid response systems, quickly alerting us to potential threats or rewards, and mobilizing our bodies and minds to take action. So, if you learn to govern this response, and I go back to, and we've said in previous episodes, how many times have you said in your life something that you wished you could take back? You said something that was really fucked up and was really mean. And then you had the audacity to look at the person and go, I didn't mean that. And the person sitting there may be sitting there saying, I understand, and go in their mind saying, you're an asshole, you did mean to say it because you said it. But you allowed your emotions, that is an emotional response to an outside stimulus that you could have controlled if you knew how. Or at least you might have tempered it down to a point where you could have said something that might have been stern, but not ugly. There's a huge difference. And you all of us have done that. How many friends, relationships, how many family members have you had a strained relationship with because you said something really ugly, or vice versa, something ugly was really said to you by someone close to you in your family? Because we oftentimes tend to hurt the people closest to us. It's a sad fact. So, when we experience an emotion, our bodies undergo a series of changes, such as increased heart rate, sweating, or changes in facial expression. These psychological responses are orchestrated by the automatic nervous system, or autonomic nervous system, sorry, not automatic, which regulates involuntary body functions. The role of emotions in our lives. Emotions play a multifaceted role including our thoughts, behaviors, and social interactions. They serve as a source of motivation. So you want to be able to control that outburst, because if you can, and you can do that via breathing, if you're breathing in through your nose, maybe you even have to shut your eyes. You say, look, I'm going to shut my eyes a second because I want to hear what you're saying, and I want to take it in because I don't want to make an outburst. So, you know, you may just say, hey, and just kind of focus on your breathing for a second, in through your nose, out through your mouth, and just listen to what somebody's saying. I don't got to, you know, somebody tell you got to look me in that. Fuck you, I don't have to do shit. See how that would work? There's a prime example. Someone giving you an ultimatum. So there's a lot of stuff out there that can screw you up. Because what happens is, if I burst out and say, I don't have to do shit, well, the combative level of our conversation just went up tenfold. Now, not only do we have the original problem, we got a new problem. You gave me an ultimatum, and I bursted back out. Instead of listening all the way through and then going, you know, just so we're clear, I don't respond to ultimatums very well. If we could put that aside for a minute and you allow me to be me and I allow you to be you, can we agree to do that? Could that have been a better response? And if they still want to fight, then say, you know what? Obviously, I don't think we're going to get anywhere today, because obviously your emotions are running high, and I totally respect that. I understand. My emotions are a little high, and I think that cooler heads would prevail. If, why don't we go drink a Coke, not together, but why don't we go relax for a minute and come back to this? This afternoon, tomorrow. There's always a way to forego any more escalation. So, sorry, I'm reading through a couple of things I'm trying to get to there. So the complexity of emotional experiences, emotions are only sometimes straightforward or easily categorized. They can be complex, nuanced, and highly individualized. Many factors, including past experiences, cultural backgrounds, and personal values, shape our emotional experience. One exciting aspect of emotional complexity is the concept of mixed emotions, where individuals experience multiple, sometimes contradictory, emotions simultaneously. For example, one might feel excited and nervous about an upcoming challenge or experience both joy and sadness during a bittersweet moment. The intensity and duration of emotions can also vary significantly from person to person and situation to situation. Some individuals may experience emotions more intensely than others, while certain situations may evoke stronger or more prolonged emotional responses. So, understanding the regulation of your emotions, the science of your emotions, is crucial to developing an effective emotional regulation strategy. So, you know, when you understand, and I'm reading, you know, I'm talking through my book, when you understand these things, this makes a big difference in how people will deal with you and how you'll deal with people in your life, so that you can and will make good choices and not emotional choices. Because emotional choices is a train wreck. And it can cause things to absolutely come to a screeching halt. And that's a sad state of affairs, because there may be a clearer path if emotion was led out of the room and put over here on a shelf for a time. You know, you don't have to make emotional responses . And if you do, then you're going to have to live with that that consequence, if there is one. And again, I go back to the easiest way to understand that is to see that sometimes we say things that we didn't mean in the heat of the moment, or we got emotional and allowed our emotions to overtake our mouths, and then that becomes a whole new issue. So, you know, remember to take time to reframe your thoughts. Be self-aware in the moment. You know, sometimes you have to sit there, and one of the tricks I do is I sit there and I squeeze my pinky while somebody's talking. One, because it reminds me that I need to, when I do it, I sit there and go, okay, this is so I don't have an outburst. I squeeze my pinky. Because then I'm kind of on a two-way radio here. I got to remember that I got to push the button to talk, is basically, for to simplify it, is, and it also reminds me that I'm thinking of something else, so I don't make a stupid mistake. So I just kind of put my hands in my lap and I grab a pinky and I sit there and hold on to that while I'm going through whatever emotional experience that I happen to be in that particular moment. All right, we're going to take a very short break here. I'm going to get some water and I will be right back. And we're back. So, you can become the most formidable person in the room if you learn how to govern your emotions. And you can. There are strategies for regulating your emotions. You know, reframing your thoughts before, and I use, go back to my little pinky thing. You know, find some way to keep yourself aware, situationally aware of what you're about to say or what you're about to blurt out. You know, you can do this. It takes practice, but you can do this, and it's worth it. I'm not going to say that I don't have emotional outbursts, but I can tell you this, any emotional outburst that I have now is normally very sedate and not something that I'm going to be apologizing for, you know, other than, hey, that may have come off a little snappy, sorry, you know. Hell, I'm probably more doing that to the dogs than, you know, come here, you know, you know, tell them to get their ass in the house. So here's something that I hope that you will think about. So, if you're a parent and say you've got young children and they get out on their own, you've done your job, and they're sitting in an interview, because now they're famous. And the host ask them, you know, well, tell us about your upbringing, tell us about your family, you know, how, what was mom and dad like? And what would, knowing what you know about yourself today, what would your kids say? So, for example, instead of sitting them down and talking to them when you're emotionally very pissed with them, do you yell and scream at them? Do you actually listen when they ask you to listen? Or do you say, mommy's making dinner, go in the other room now, go, y'all get out of here, leave me alone. And you do that, and all the life, and you really don't think anything of it, but, you know, I'm busy. Can y'all leave me alone for a minute? I just got home from work. God damn, can I just breathe for a second before y'all come at me? Are your kids going to be struggling to find some reason why they liked your upbringing? Or are they going to be able to say, you know, anytime I asked either one of my parents, you know, to do something, stop, be present in the moment, or let's say I did something stupid, they didn't yell at me. They were pissed, I could tell, but they didn't yell and scream at me. We sat down and we talked it through. Because there are consequences to what we do. Real consequences to what we do. So, what happens when everybody around you doesn't want to be around you because you're an emotional outburst shithead, including your children, including your family, including your coworkers? So this is where we have to really draw the line in the sand with ourselves and say, how am I perceived? How do I handle things emotionally? I remember my ski coach, you know, was always like, you know, you'd get at the bottom of the mountain and he was going to watch other, you know, there was other teammates of mine that were coming down, you know, and if I had done something that he wanted, this was not just me, this was the entire team. He would ski down to the lift and ride the lift back with you, and he would really have a conversation. Not an emotional outburst. What the hell are you doing? I told you to, you know, your tips of your skis are downhill. You know, whatever he was trying to tell us. Where is your body? You know, no. He would ride back up the hill and he would say, okay, here's what I want you to see. And here's what I want you to look at. And then what would inevitably happen is he would go watch me. And he would ski down through the gates and then he would wave his pole at the bottom telling you're next, come on. And I'll never forget that, ever. I don't. And I mean, this is back in my very young youth, you know, junior racers. And I remember that he, you know, Chuck would always ride the lift with you. And if he had something to tell, I mean, he never had an emotional outburst. It was pretty cool. He might get on the left and he'll look at you with that face and he'd go, you know why I'm here, right? You know, yeah, I do. And he goes, okay, so what made you wash out in this part of the course, or what made you do this, what made you do that, you know, what were you not thinking about, what were you not concentrating on? So that was really cool. And then you would hear football coaches or basketball coaches screaming at their players instead of correcting their players. And I'm not saying that that's, you know, if you're a coach and that's just who you are, that's who you are. But you can scream and yell at everybody, and you can be a hard ass, and you can throw your chair across the court. But is anybody really listening to you at that point? Or do you sit there and you go, hey, bring it in? And this could be even in a work environment. Maybe you had a totally shitty sales day. You bring everybody in and do you crap them out, or do you sit there and go, where did we go wrong? Where were we dropping the ball? And that goes from the manager's chair all the way through. It's where did we drop the ball? Because we failed as a team today. You know, we had the opportunities, we had the everything in it, and you know. Or when your husband or wife comes home, you know, and you're mad because they forgot to do something. You know, right when they walk through the door, boom. Or do you give them a kiss, let them come in and go, you know, and maybe sit down and go, here, have a beer, have a glass of wine, have a Coke. And sit down and go, hey, look, I'm not trying to, you know, this is getting where it's affecting me. So how do we work through this together? Or do you tell them, you didn't take the fucking trash out again, and so now, blah, 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 you didn't, you know, what do you mean you forgot to put the steaks out to thaw? What the hell are we going to eat now? Is all that shit emotionally driven to the point where now feelings are getting hurt? Or are you just sitting there going, God, will this MF-er shut up? Great, all I ever hear is some bullshit thing when I walk through the door. Those are emotional responses that you have control over. Abso-frickin-lutely. Because the way that you address that emotional problem is how you do it. So wouldn't it be cool, and we go back to the kids, if the kids in this interview, if the kids were able to say, you know what was really cool and I learned the most, and I do that as a mother today, or I do that as a father today, that one of the greatest lessons I learned from my parents was to never get emotional. I got pissed, don't get me wrong. There are times when I've got very angry, but I didn't get emotional with it. I sat down and so when you do this, and you sit down with them and you make them listen, in the sense that we can sit here all night, but we're going to talk about this. We're going to have a dialogue about this. And you can still do the non-emotional response in the sense that you sit down and you can talk, and if you know that it's going in one ear, out the other, you still went through it and say, look, if you want to talk about this tomorrow, because I'm not feeling that you're following me, I'm feeling that you're kind of not listening to me, let's come back to this tomorrow. But we're not going to yell and scream at each other about it, and we're, you know, I understand you think you can stay out till midnight, but you're 15 years old, you're 16 years old, and that scares me. I understand you think you're okay because you're with your friends, and guess what, y'all aren't thinking about, and you shouldn't have to think about, but as parents, I have to, is your safety. Safety, and that's the most important thing to me. And when you teach your children how to understand other people's emotions in a situation where they're listening to, if you instill that in them at a very young age, where they listen, say, okay, well, why are you mad at me? Okay, well, this is why I did it. And chances are, by the time you walk through it, both of you are going to be in a situation where they learned, you learned a little bit about what they were thinking during that time, and you hug it out. There you go. Yelling and screaming at each other, and your teenage daughter runs in her bedroom and slams her door, tells you she hates you. Was that constructive at all for either of you? But you couldn't get your foot off of the gas pedal, and you kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And that's what I'm talking about. In a situation, doesn't matter whether it could be with your teenage daughter, it could be with coworkers, it could be with your significant other. If you keep pushing the gas pedal, you're gonna evoke a response. But when you can learn to quell that and you can slow it down and say, wait a minute. Even if you've got to let somebody vent for a second. Say, okay, you cool venting? Because we're not gonna emotionally come at each other. I allowed you the minute to get this shit off your chest, but we're not gonna emotionally come after each other. Does that make sense? Sure it does. Absolutely it does. So you can have effective communication and emotional expression. So you can have a conversation, and the person that you're having a conversation, i.e. child or spouse, can understand that you are incredibly pissed, or you're angry, or you're disappointed. But it can still be effective communication because you're talking. But they can see in your face, they can see by your hand gestures or whatever, that you're plenty pissed. But we're not doing things that are putting us in situations where we have to go back and say, I'm sorry. And if you're in a business negotiation and someone that you're negotiating with completely loses their shit, guess what? They're losing their shit because they're out of ammo. They got nothing. So you evaluate and you act accordingly, but you don't lose your shit. You absolutely don't lose your shit. Calmest person in a highly energized room is the most formidable person there, because they're not letting emotions run their mouth. They're not letting emotions run their thought process. They're not allowing their emotions to run their brain. Clear, concise behavior is running the show. Makes you an incredibly formidable competitor. You look for reasons to counter, you look for reasons to compromise, you look for reasons to find common ground. Even if you're giving and they're giving, you're still finding common ground. You know, if you suffer from, you know, PTSD, maybe you're bipolar, you know, all these things, this can be a real challenge. You know, this can be an incredible challenge. I lived with someone for a very long time who I loved immensely. And she suffered from borderline personality disorder and all that comes with it. And when you knew her her backstory, I was able to not be, because she could put you in a situation where you could get really angry and you could feel really hurt or you could feel really pissed or, you know, because borderline personality people are very masterful at certain things in their life. That narcissistic portion of it comes out in hurtful and very meaningful ways in your life. And so I was able to, for that, better understand, because I knew her backstory. I knew why, kind of why, the story of her childhood and all the things that led up to where she was in that moment and that day. It helped me to understand and be more tolerable instead of emotional, and not outburst at her where, you know, ultimately we didn't make it. But I did understand, and I think that for a very long time while we were struggling through those times, I was able to handle it a lot better than maybe I would have if I hadn't learned to govern my emotions so that I understood. And that gets me back to, you gotta learn both sides of the fence. You gotta learn both sides of the story, because if you know her story, her backstory, then you sit there and go, damn, I'd probably have some issues myself. And then it becomes, you know, you when they're having an incredible moment, because even with that, the suicide rate in that segment of mental health is incredibly high. So you kind of sit there and you let them do their thing, and, you know, then hopefully there's a point where you can grab their hand, sit beside them, and say, hey, we're having a moment. And then you have to go through, are you doing it at the right time? Because then you hear, fuck you, you're psycho babble bullshit, you know? Well, yeah, there you go. But the doctors helped you to recognize, and you recognize they're having an episode of sorts. So that's why you have to learn both sides of the fence, both sides of the story. It's, you know, you can't have, because if I didn't listen to what got her to that place, I would have never understood it, and we would have never made it as long as we did. And I'm grateful for the years that we had together. I love this woman beyond measure. But that, you know, it just wasn't in the cards for us to last, I guess. I don't know that I'll ever understand it, but I've come to understand that I have to accept it, and I've way moved on with my life, and I'm fine. But I can talk about it today without getting emotional, without crying about it. Because that's kind of one of the things that comes with that. Painful, it hurts, but there you have it. But we wouldn't have made it as long as we did, I want to reemphasize this, had I not listened to her entire backstory. Because after that, then our working together became much easier and way more productive. And helped a lot. And sometimes you have to seek out professional support. You know, you have to embrace the power of self-care and building resilience and adaptability. Because you may have to adapt to something that you don't necessarily understand or subscribe to, but in order to make something work, you may have to have some adaptability. It depends on what you're willing to give to get. So you have to apply all of this into your emotional regulation in relationships, your emotional regulation in the workplace. How many of you got pissed at work and said, fuck you, I quit, and walked off the job? I'm going to say if we were in a room, probably 90% of you would, if not all of you, would raise your hand, because at some point in time you got super emotional at work and you stormed off the job. So, would it be a help if you knew how to govern that emotion? If you learn to do this, I promise you will have a more fulfilling life. You know? It absolutely will give you a much more fulfilling life. Absolutely. I am going through this last part. Okay. You know, you have to learn how to unlock the power of this, and you do it with practice. You do it with a conscious mind, like I said. You grab your pinky finger or any finger on your hand, squeeze your hand. But if you're doing something that the reason that you're doing it is to self-regulate, you will remember, because you're holding your hand there. And if you move your hands, it will come top of mind. If you learn how to use deep breathing, just in through the nose, out through the mouth, while you're sitting in a situation, if you think about your breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth, keeping your heart rate down, this too will be incredibly powerful for you. Learning to meditate, not in the moment, but learning to meditate will also, learning to quiet your mind, especially if you do this in the morning, if you do it before, you know, when you wake up, if you sit down and take, you know, maybe you wake up an hour early and you take 45, 50 minutes to just lay in your bed with your headphones on, quietly. Listen to some good meditative music. Get yourself in a space of relaxation. And start your day that way. Set a tone for the day. Man, it's going to be all in. You know, learn to set emotional check-ins with yourself. You know, be sure to maybe set some breaks and reminders that, you know, if your anxiety's a little high, get up and walk down the hall. You know, take a break. You know, do some deep breathing and just take a break for a minute. You know, learning to be grateful for things in your life. You know, learning to be grateful for what you have, not for what you don't have. Because you can't be grateful for what you don't have, but you can be grateful for what you do have. You know, like if business for me slows down, then I'm grateful for the equipment I have, so when it picks up, I have the equipment to do the job that I need to do. So I'm grateful, very grateful for my equipment, and that I have, you know, if it's slow and the economy's a little edgy right now, so things are a little slow, and I do have a couple of documentaries I'm working on, but I also know that funding for that is challenging, you know, because my executive producer, they were in Dubai, they had the floods, and A lot of their office, where they were, was destroyed. Some of their cars were destroyed, and you know, it's things that are. We lost a lot of computer power that we had in there. That, you know, we could have freaked out and done all those things, and we did lose some very vital work. And part of that was poor planning. We should have had some of it backed up in other areas, but we hadn't had an opportunity to do it, and the floods came, and our part of our server bank got lost because it happened in at a time when nobody was in the office. So that kind of sucked. So learning to be grateful for even the smallest of things. You know, physical activity. And you don't got, you know, I would, honest to God, I'd rather have a root canal than go to the gym. I just don't like it. Never have. And what's crazy for me is my father, God rest his soul, when he was alive and he was my age and a little bit younger than me, he was huge into the gym. I mean, that became, in fact, in the later years of his life, it became his life. He was, he built gyms all over the world. He did, and most of it was military. And he was friends with really people you would know in the gym world and powerlifting and bodybuilding world, you know, that were his good, very dear friends. And he got into that like crazy. At one point in time, he was ranked one and two in the world in powerlifting and men over 60 and 70. And, you know, he was just, that was his thing. And I just can't get into the gym. So for me, I just have to, I gotta, if I'm gonna work, do any kind of physical activity, I normally will go hike, walk the riverbank, do something like that, that, you know, maybe hit it. You know, I can, I enjoy yoga, enjoy heated yoga a lot, that type of thing, but I'm just not a big gym person. And if I go to the gym, chances are I'm probably just going to do the treadmill, and that's because I hate lifting weights. I just did, just not who I just don't get into it. So you can find physical activity, just figure out what it is for you. You know, having some social connection, you know, and nurturing supportive relationships is essential to emotional well-being. You know, make time each day to connect with loved ones. Like I talk to my mom, I call my youngest sister, I call my son who prefers to text. His generation, that's they are texters. My youngest son, he will talk on the phone, but my oldest son, he loves the texting. So it's a process for me, because I'm just that. I'm just like, God, I gotta type this shit out. I just want to talk, answer the phone. So, but you know, that's his thing, and I acquiesce to that because that's who my son is. He just doesn't. He doesn't dig talking on the phone. So, why make a big deal of it? So I text. And we send each other, you know, funny stuff. You know, you have to have some sort of creative expansion in your life. You know, whether you sit down and play an acoustic guitar, you sit down and write in a journal, you do some art, you know, have some creative activities that get your brain somewhere else doing something. You know, maybe you're a gardener. Maybe you're, you know, you want to have a vegetable garden or a beautiful flower garden. Whatever the case may be, find that creative expansion, expressions, excuse me, that creative expression in your life so that you can begin to feel totally fulfilled. And it's good to sit down at the end of the day and kind of mull over what you got done, what you would have done differently. Any places where you experience some emotions that maybe need your attention, as far as patting yourself on the back and saying, "I'm proud of myself for doing that. I could have twisted a cap off that, but I didn't." And give yourself a chance to say, in your maybe your good night meditation that you kind of put out in the universe that you're looking forward to the next day's transition of your life. And then get some good sleep. Take care of yourself. Take care of your body. It's important to get some sound sleep. And when you meditate, or if you do some deep breathing before you go to bed, you'll sleep a lot better. And if you start to dream, keep a dream journal. Start finding out, because dreams are about the dreamer. So, a lot of people go, "Oh my God, I got killed in a dream." Well, it's not what you think it is. You just let go of some emotional garbage that needed to go completely away. It's your subconscious flushing the toilet. And it may come out in a graphic way. Why were there dogs in my dream? Why were there cats in my dream? Why were there rain in my dream? Why was I in my bedroom on the third floor of the house looking at the clouds? All of those things, if you write all that stuff down, you'll begin to understand from your dreams what's going on in your head, and you'll be able to adjust and act accordingly. And don't think that that's some metaphysical voodoo shit. It's not. What it is Freud used dreams as part of his interpretation of what was going on in your life. And it does make it is kind of cool. I have a couple of different dream journals. You can Google, "Hey, what does it mean in a dream if I saw a cat in the window and I was, where was it? Where were you in the house? What window were you looking through?" All of these things make a difference, and then you'll begin to do those things. So taking care of yourself is not a bad thing. And if you learn to relax before you hit the rack, I'm telling you, it makes all the difference in the world, and you will love it. So with that, we're going to shut it down. I appreciate you tuning in today. Sorry for the little glitch early on in the episode, and we had a little glitch in the matrix, and so but I don't normally edit stuff like that out, and there's a good reason for it. Keeps the show real, in my opinion. So because when you see that you don't have to be perfect in this world to be in this world, it makes living in this world a whole lot easier. So I also put out we also did a new video that is on our YouTube channel. And again, if you go to our bio and you click on my Linktree account, you can get to our YouTube page, but it's called "You'll Never See What You Don't Go Find. Discover the Wonders of the World." And it's just a little 2-minute video. And what I try to do is just show videos of beautiful things that only take you going out and getting in the car and going and seeing them. I'll never forget when I was real little in Dallas. My mom and dad were still married, and I was, oh gosh, my Debbie and I were probably, God, 4 and 3, because it wouldn't be till I got to New Mexico that I actually went to kindergarten. So I would have been, about 4 years old, four or close to 5 years old. And I remember distinctly that my mom put us in her Mustang, an And I remember her getting her Mustang and how cool she was, you know, and this would have been in the 60s. And she goes, oh my God, there was something on the TV and we live right down from it. What was the spillway at White Rock Lake in Dallas, Texas? And it was spilling over and it was flooding really bad. And my mom drove down to a place where we could park, and we were able to watch from across the street, and the water, it was like blowing out of a dam. It was unbelievable. I'll never forget it. So there are things, my point being, there are things out in the world, unless you go see them. That was something, that a gift that my mom gave me. You know, I don't know if my sister got as much out of it as I did, but that was the coolest shit. And I remember all of my life when I was living in Dallas, I would go to that spillway, especially if it was storming. Especially, and I took my son there. I said, man, you know, grandma brought me here. And sometimes it was really cool. And sometimes when he and I were there, it was never like what I saw when I was a child, but it was still pretty cool. That the water was really just boiling over the spillway, and you could park fairly close and check it out. So, you know, those are things that help you remind you that life is a happy moment if you allow it to be. A memorable moment if you allow it to be. And if you regulate it on just emotion and negative emotion, you're never gonna get past where you are today. And I'm just suggesting to you that doesn't have to be that way. That doesn't have to stay that way at all. It's all a choice. Happy or sad, it's a choice. So, with all that, thank you again for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Sorry I kind of got off the garden path there, but that was a good story. And like I said, remember, you just click onto our link in our bio, which is my link tree. It'll take you to all the stuff. Please go check out our books. Most of the books that I have out on Kindle are now being pushed over to paperback. It's only about a buck or two more than a Kindle version, so I try to keep it the cost down so that people can find it affordable even in this day and age. So with that, God bless you. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Flight Risk Studios podcast show, and I'm your host, Robert Bruton, saying bye for now.